It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Over the weekend, Pittsburgh Pirates players voted unanimously not to go on a scheduled trip to Puerto Rico over concerns about the Zika virus. The Pirates were to have played two games later this month in San Juan against the Miami Marlins. Zika is a mosquito-borne and sexually transmitted virus that causes microcephaly in infants born to mothers infected with it. The spread of the Zika virus has researchers at the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health partnering with a Brazilian foundation to find a cure. Together, they've launched Cura Zika, an international alliance to perform much-needed research addressing the Zika epidemic. I'm joined now in studio by two people whose goal is developing a Zika vaccine. Dr. Ernesto Marquez, a native of Brazil and a professor of infectious diseases and microbiology at Pitt, and Pitt epidemiology professor Jennifer Adibi. Dr. Marquez, Dr. Adibi, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Welcome, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Paul.
And if you have a comment or question about the Zika virus, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at essspgh. The number again, 412-246-2002. I'm guessing there are plenty of people who have questions about Zika, and in particular, how the virus can be cured if there is such a possibility. How far away is it? You can call with your questions and comments at 412-246-2002. First of all, let's start by having you talk about what Cura Zika is. How is it funded, and what can it do to stop the spread of the Zika virus? Dr. Marquez, Dr. Adibi.
Yeah, Cura Zika is an initiative between the Pitt Public Health and Fiocruz Foundation in Brazil, and it's funded basically by private donors that wish to remain anonymous, and also by the Pitt Public Health funds, and the idea is to accelerate resources to researchers that want to do critical research at this stage of the outbreak. Normally, the whole process for funding and grants and all this takes a long time. The idea is to accelerate this so the research can move faster. So that's the goal of Cura Zika.
And, you know, there's understandably a lot of anxiety that people have about this. Is it reasonable to expect a cure for Zika can be found anytime soon?
Yes, I think methods to prevent infection, I would say some already exist, like from mosquito repellent. These are means to prevent infection, but also antiviral drugs or biologics that can like antibodies or certain hormones that can prevent transmission from the mother to the baby. But our holy grail is a vaccine, and that can be done as well.
I haven't gone out and started stocking up on mosquito repellent yet, but I'm guessing that the marketers are going to want to put, you know, in addition to prevents the spread of West Nile, which is already on all the bottles, a lot of people already have, that they might add Zika. That'd be a good way of selling some mosquito repellent. But it brings to mind the idea that you know, West Nile has been a big concern, and it hasn't gone away. So, if you think about it in those terms, is it reasonable to expect that Zika can go away, Dr. Adibi? What do you think?
I don't have the expertise, I must say, as my disclaimer, in viruses. Certainly Dr. Marquez knows better than I do, but as an observation, it does seem that transmission and survival of these various viruses in our climate and in the northern climates does probably differ dramatically than in Central America, South America.
So, Dr. Marquez, well, first of all, go ahead and answer that question.
Yeah, I agree with what Jennifer just mentioned. But it's not. I don't think it's going to go away. I think it's going to remain, but perhaps not as far north as Pennsylvania. But it can remain in some level.
But we have seen cases here from people who've traveled to these areas.
Yeah, imported cases, not autochthonous transmissions of the virus in this area yet, like not human mosquito to human transmission yet.
So what does it take to develop a virus, to develop a vaccine for the virus?
Well, first, we have to understand what the immune system needs to do to protect against that virus. Normally, is what we call neutralizing antibodies and cytotoxic T cells, like special cells that kill cells that become infected. So once we know this, we design antigens, and then we find ways how to give those pieces of the virus to the immune to the person, so the immune system can see and create that same kind of response. In this process, what is difficult or often difficult is to define how safe that is, and all the proof that's not going to cause any harm. And that's early on in the developmental process. And then later is to prove efficacy, like is it indeed protecting women that is exposed to the virus to actually have this congenital disease or not. So this is what it, in a nutshell, what it takes.
How are people in Brazil dealing with this?
Well, I think people is afraid. I'd say most women that is pregnant and, let's say, their husbands or partners are afraid to contract the disease and have a child that has this malformation. It's very stressful for all women that becomes pregnant during this period, for sure.
412-246-2002 to join our conversation with our guests, two folks who are with the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health, Dr. Ernesto Marques, a native of Brazil and a professor of infectious diseases and microbiology at Pitt, and Pitt epidemiology professor Dr. Jennifer Adebi. We have Brian on the phone at 412-246-2002. Brian calling from Washington, PA. Hello, Brian. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah. My question was, Zika's been endemic for generations in Africa. How come they don't seem to be having the microcephaly and other health issues that they're having in Brazil?
Well, there are several possibilities or hypotheses for that. I would start saying that perhaps there is, and it just has not been observed or detected by the health authorities. I have to say, when there was an outbreak in Polynesia, although there was a large study by the French group, they didn't observe microcephaly there. Another possibility is that a different strain of the virus. Actually, we have identified three main groups of Zika virus that behave differently. Another possibility is environmental aspects that can change or modulate your immune response to the virus, or like previous exposure to other virus or to other disease that can make to change how the next infection is going to behave. These are the three main hypotheses today.
Brian, hopefully that answers your question. Let's go to Linda in Pittsburgh. Hi, Linda. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. So if you're the parent of a young girl but still able to get pregnant, say 13, 14, and you're debating whether to travel to one of these countries, say Brazil, do you have to worry if you do become infected with the Zika virus and then you do recover? Is this something that could affect a later pregnancy, later on in life, or is it just something that would happen with a pregnancy that you had while you actually got infected with the virus?
Okay, that's a good question, and I just want to clarify what you're asking. You're saying, Linda, that you're talking about traveling with a daughter who is a young teenager, and if they were to contract the Zika virus, would it affect a pregnancy later in their life?
Yes.
Interesting question. Dr. Adebi?
I'll try to take that one. So, I think this is a very unusual type of virus is what I hear from various scientists in the field that it's acting in enigmatic ways. And so, yeah, so these concerns are extremely valid. We just simply don't know what's going to happen over time in people who are infected pre-pregnancy or even during pregnancy. I think one indication for concern is that it's been shown it can survive in sperm for several months. Is that correct, Ernesto? Yeah. So maybe there are reasons to speculate that it would survive or persist in a woman's body over time. I think the biggest recommendation, strongest recommendation right now is to use protection. If you go into these endemic countries where the infection exists, use mosquito repellent, wear the right clothing to prevent mosquito bites.
Practice safe sex.
Practice safe sex, exactly. And also get tested, certainly before you were to go and conceive.
Now, the question that Linda had for women, and maybe we just don't know at this point, but would the concern be the same for a man? Let's say, in fact, I think the first person in either Pennsylvania or Allegheny County who was identified was a male. So let's say you get this. And it apparently runs its course just like a lot of other viruses do, where there's the fever, there's the normal effects you associate with getting an airborne virus in the United States. So it runs its course. Does it ever completely leave your system? Years down the road, should you be concerned if you and your partner are trying to conceive a child?
Well. At this point, what we know is that the virus can remain or is detected in sperm for 2 months or maybe longer. It's not clear how long it remains. But there is no indication that can remain for years or any of that. And not everybody has this long-term shedding of virus. I'll tell you, for a girl that becomes infected, I would say if the pregnancy is not within a short period of time, maybe a year or less, if it is like a pregnancy 10 years later or 5 years later, I think the odds to have a congenital disease because of that is extremely small. Although we can't say for certain at this point because everything's so new. We've learned about this disease a little more than 6 months ago. So we don't know yet what is going to happen years from now.
When did this first show up? It seems that it wasn't that long ago that we were first hearing about it, and now it has become certainly a concern in this hemisphere. When did you first start hearing about it in Brazil or from Brazilians?
Okay, so we have been studying dengue in Brazil for a long time. So late 2014, some of the clinicians that work with us start to say, hey, we are seeing this weird kind of dengue infection that doesn't really look like dengue. The patients don't have fever. They didn't have it's much milder. And they keep insisting that we are having this odd asymptomatic disease, and by April we figure out it was Zika. And at that point, no one thought it was anything serious because not much was known about Zika. Was, as one of the callers mentioned before, existed in Africa and didn't cause much harm. And then in June, we start to see a few patients, but it's a very small number of patients, like 100 or so, that had this neurological disease, but it still is like it's 1 in 1,000 or less of the Zika-infected people that had this neurological disease that's rare, but there was an increase in this Guillain-Barré syndrome was identified. But again, was not something that people was really, really concerned. The real concern start late September, October, when we start to see this amazing or this increase on microcephaly cases that no one expected or had any idea where did come from. Zika was not known to cause this kind of problem. But then some of my colleagues start to make the association that that births coincide with the first trimester and the peak of the incidence of that strange asymptomatic disease. Sometime before that, when we were investigating the neurological cases, we saw the virus in the brain tissues. So we start to raise the hypothesis that Zika infection and microcephaly were tied together. So by late November, early December, Brazil Ministry of Health suggested there was a link, and later on WHO recognized that, and more recently the CDC.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and I'm talking with two members of the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health who are partnering, the school is, with the Brazilian Foundation to find a cure for the Zika virus. Zika, again, a mosquito-borne virus that can also be transmitted sexually. We're talking with Dr. Ernesto Marquez, a native of Brazil and professor of infectious diseases and microbiology at Pitt, and Pitt epidemiology professor Dr. Jennifer Adibi. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH@WESA.FM, on Twitter at ESSPGH. Dr. Adibi, as I mentioned earlier, the Zika virus, and we've already established in the course of this conversation, it causes microcephaly in infants characterized by a small skull and underdeveloped brain. At what point in the pregnancy are the mother and the fetus most vulnerable? What do we know about that?
Yeah, so I guess this is exactly where I come in. I do not, as I mentioned, have the expertise in virology, infectious disease. I spend my days thinking about how another type of exposure, so exposure to plastics and pesticides, which is ubiquitous in our society, in our country, how that might be affecting this amazing organ called the placenta, and then how that response can be transmitted to the fetus and result in long-term health effects. And so when this came on the scene, actually, I just randomly ran into our dean, Dr. Donald Burke, Graduate School of Public Health, University of Pittsburgh, and he mentioned this to me. So I started grinding through my knowledge base and figuring out what might I be able to apply to this problem in terms of understanding how an infection could cause such extreme defect and the role of the placenta. So to answer your question, you know, it's unfolding daily for sure, but I would say we have enough evidence that the virus can effectively cross the placenta and in a very effective, potent way cause major defects in the development of the embryonic and fetal brain. Some of the questions that remain certainly are, when is this transmission most effective and most correlated with defect or most extreme defect versus less extreme defect? And so certainly, as Ernesto already said, first trimester infection is most highly correlated with the microcephaly, so the most extreme defect. And then infections later in pregnancy are correlated with other types of nervous system effects. So there's still negative actions of the virus. They're just not maybe at that kind of early phase of brain development. But I think what we're trying to work on is going earlier and earlier in pregnancy and see, indeed, is there any kind of time period where the placenta is emitting, transmitting, broadcasting information into maternal blood that we can pick up that tells us there's an infection and a risk of fetal defects, but maybe early enough to do something and maybe stop infection or reduce long-term effects on child.
So what I'm understanding from what you're saying is that there's still a lot to learn about the role that the placenta plays in either blocking or transmitting Zika to the fetus.
Yeah, so the transmission happens. We don't know exactly when it starts. There might be a period where it is effectively blocking it. And then the other piece is how the the placenta affects the fetus. So there are cases in the literature where certain viruses do not actually get through, but you still have a fetal effect, which suggests that the response of the placenta, say some secretion of a molecule or overproduction of a hormone or something, could be affecting the baby's development in the absence of the actual infection. We don't really think that's happening in Zika, but again, there's no data before basically 10 weeks in pregnancy.
Do we know yet the range of abnormalities of the syndrome, Dr. Marquez?
I think we're just scratching the surface of this. Like, the microcephaly is easy to detect, but there are other abnormalities that can appear as a result of Zika infection during the pregnancy that we may not be able to observe right at birth, but we may observe just as the child develops.
What kind of research needs to be done in that area?
Well, I think Jennifer has some ideas on that. One of them is to have these longitudinal pregnancy cohorts that you follow the mothers and the babies, and we compare the development among the populations that got exposed to the virus versus not, in how the child developed. There are some efforts in this area from the NIH and European Union in designing those cohorts, and I think they are in the process of being implemented still.
And Dr. Adibi, what else can be done at this point?
Yeah, I think we still need to uncover some essential data points and understand things like temporal relationship of exposure to infection of mother and effects in child. I think there's a lot, you know, to understand there. And then, as Ernesto said, you know, we in the U.S. are in an essential, you know, vulnerable place right now. If this infection comes into the U.S. in a large scale, we need to be well poised to be able to detect infections very early and understand, again, how things relate to each other over time and hence get closer at causal understanding. So, you know, my feeling is we should start now to set up systems of recruiting women, even preconception, extremely early in pregnancy, start collecting information on, you know, where they've been, what they're exposed to, who they are, what their medical histories are, and then be in a really good place to have reporting. If you get a rash, call this number. If you have any kind of weird symptom, you know, report that to your doctor. So there's just kind of an ongoing basis data collection starting from very early time points. And then if we do start to see infection, we'll already be able to look at correlations of pre-pregnancy health, infection, outcome. It's the gold standard, basically, in public health of how you establish causal relationships. It's a longitudinal birth cohort.
412-246-2002. Let's take a question from Muhammad in Upper St. Clair. Hi, Muhammad. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking the call. It's an interesting subject. I was wondering, does this virus behave like a retrovirus, like the HIV, and does it integrate into the DNA system? And have they ever tried to sequence this virus or not? And the follow-up question was, is there any restrictions on the on people going to Caribbean, like on a cruise or things like that? What should be done? I mean, apart from just the basic spray and things like that.
Okay.
Anything else, like an antiviral they can take? Or, suggestions?
All right, sorry to cut you off there, Mohammed, but we're running short on time. Go ahead, Dr. McKay.
Yeah. Well, it's not a retrovirus. It's a RNA virus and doesn't integrate in the human genome. And in regard to traveling, I would say the recommendations, I think each person should individually consult their own doctors in that regard. I think it's a very broad thing to, because it changes family planning. It has to be on case-by-case basis. But I would say, from my personal perspective, I would not have any restriction going to Caribbean.
What do you think of the Pirates players' decision not to travel to Puerto Rico later this month, and also the team that they were playing, the Miami Marlins? Both teams voted unanimously not to go to Puerto Rico because of concerns raised about the Zika virus. You know, the Puerto Ricans are very unhappy. They're still there. They're going to be doing some kind of ceremony in that stadium. People will be there, but the players won't. Are they overreacting?
I think it's a sad story, but I really don't understand the whole rationale of the position of the players. I know they are having health concerns, and I think probably if they read more and understand more the concerns, maybe they are having a superficial idea of the whole issue. I would say they probably would stay 3 or 4 days there. And I would say in a short period of time, the odds or the actual exposure of them to actually get infected would have been very small individually. In another aspect, I would say in males, the disease is not that problematic, and most people don't even recognize that they got infected. And I would say unless the one of them or some of them, are their spouses are pregnant or they are planning to conceive in some time soon, I would say those specific players perhaps should not go. I don't understand as a whole team, unless it's in solidarity to the colleague that is not going to be able to play, I really don't see a major reason. I think in some ways offends the Puerto Ricans that they live there and gives the impression that the players are disgusted by that. They feel the city is filthy. People live there. So it's like it's so bad that they can't spend 3 days there.
As you know, last question for you. As you know, the Olympics are being held in Brazil in less than 3 months. How concerned should the competitors be? This is your homeland, yeah. Dr. Marquez. Should Americans who have made plans to travel to Brazil attend the games, or should they think twice about going? What are your thoughts?
I think there are several things there. It's like in 3 months, it'll be winter in Brazil, in Rio. Two, I would say the Olympic facilities will be well manicured to not have mosquitoes there. So, I don't think it's a extreme concern or it's a big concern. And as you can get tested once you return. And third, I don't think it's a good statement from the part of the athletes not going. I think it's actually a little bit offensive to everybody else. If they want to do something in concern to this problem, they should try to raise the issue and try to alert people, help to bring resources to find solutions for Zika. The legacy of Olympics can't be just empty stadiums. I would like to see something more, and perhaps a vaccine for Zika would be a good one.
Yes, the sooner the better. Let's take one last call from Mary Beth in Beaver County. Hi, Mary Beth. Welcome.
Yes, I was interested in knowing, is it possible that environmental toxins could have made us more vulnerable to these viruses? And I wondered if that had been studied at all, if that had been involved in the process of why these people became sick from Zika.
Very interesting question. Dr. Adibi, you want to take that?
Yeah, it is a very interesting question, and we are trying to put together a project to address this both kind of epidemiologically and experimentally, you know, what I'm calling epidemiology in a dish, where we can simultaneously, say, dose a placenta with the virus and with some of the compounds that we know are very prevalent, say, in the Brazilian population where the microcephaly is highest, or even in our own population, and see is there what we call an effect modifying result of the two exposures together. But there is, I think it's important to drill in, and Ernesto has a little bit, that 100, you know, not every person who's bitten by the mosquito gets the infection, gets the extreme defects. There's a lot of variability in the population and how we respond. So we must not get into a overly fearful state and try to certainly improve our protection, improve our health overall, but try to understand that, you know, there's a lot of margins for safety around Zika as well.
That was Dr. Jennifer Adibi, also Dr. Ernesto Marquez, joining us for this discussion of the Zika virus and what the Pitt Graduate School of Public Health and entities in Brazil are doing to combine to fight Zika and perhaps come up with a vaccine, with a cure. They've launched together Cura Zika, an international alliance to perform much-needed research addressing the Zika epidemic. Again, Dr. Marquez, Dr. Adibi, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, a conversation with U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs Robert McDonald, who has been working to transform the VA into a transparent, approachable institution. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.